We've got Gary Reeves from the University of South Dakota and his French horn. He's here in the studios in Vermilion, warming up down the hall. And then later this hour, we've got Kevin Wooster talking about the Mays brothers, Larry and Terry Mays. Maybe you know them. Great South Dakotans who worked in service to their state, one in Vietnam and one with the South Dakota Highway Patrol. And then coming up in the next hour, hour two of In the Moment, we're going to talk anti-ballistic missile systems. It's the topic that's on everybody's mind as we have conversations about what's happening between the United States and North Korea, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Chuck Ellington is with us. He's doing a lecture coming up. Dr. Richard Holm will have your weekly health update. Get your flu shot. Do your exercise. I think that's probably part of what we'll talk about. Denise Turner is also with us. We're going to talk with her about writing and therapeutic writing and how we can use your pen to help with post-traumatic stress disorder and more. All that's coming up in the next 2 hours of In the Moment. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back. Stay in the moment. Listener supported SDPB Radio.
We've had some fancy chefs on this program, but there are cookbooks for the rest of us too, you know.
It's a great sort of, look how quickly this comes together, look how easy this is, maybe cooking isn't so scary kind of recipe.
Sometimes it is. I'm Kai Rizdahl, How to Face Your Fears in the Kitchen, next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6:30 Central, 5:30 Mountain on SDPB Radio.
Program funding by the Northern State University Theater, presenting The Hunchback of Notre Dame, October 9th through 11th at the Harvey and Cynthia Jewett Theater in Aberdeen. Tickets and information at northern.edu/artsNSU.
On the next Fresh Air, our guest will be Jimmy Fallon, the host of The Tonight Show. He has a new children's book, his second. We'll talk about being a father, hosting The Tonight Show, dealing with politics and tragedies on the show, and the injury that nearly ripped off his finger and left him in the ICU for 10 days. Join us.
Tonight at 7 Central, 6 Mountain on SDPB Radio.
Support for arts programming on SDPB Radio is provided by your annual financial gifts and from a grant from the South Dakota Arts Council. The Arts Council is funded by the state legislature through the Department of Tourism and also by the National Endowment for the Arts.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. From the Fox Hunt to the 16th Century Opera to a fall recital at the University of South Dakota, today we explore the history and the music of the horn, the French horn to be exact. Dr. Gary Reeves is Associate Professor of Music at the University of South Dakota. He teaches horn, he directs the concert band, and he helps guide the future music educators of the state. He is with me now in the SDPB studios in Vermilion. Dr. Gary Reeves, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good morning.
My brother played the French horn, so we'll start there. So this is an instrument that I'm very fond of. Lots of people don't really know what it is, though, and they can't see us right now on the radio. So go ahead and explain a little bit about the instrument itself, and then we'll talk about its history.
Well, it is a high brass instrument, and you're right, Lori, it was originally used as a signaling instrument and for the fox hunt. Sometimes if I'm talking to small children, I'll ask them, do you know what sport it was involved in? And I always say, not basketball, because you can't dribble one. and eventually it came to be used in the opera to depict hunting scenes more authentically. And composers and performers discovered at that point that, gee, it could also be used just as part of the regular orchestra.
Who were some of the first composers who sort of become captivated by the voice and the tone and the sound and want to do more with the French horn?
One of the first composers that people would know of would be Jean-Baptiste Lully of the court of Louis XIV in France. And He was one of the first who really started to write for horn.
Yeah.
Now, about 1750, horn players discovered that by placing the right hand in the bell and changing the position of the right hand, they could fill in the notes between the partials in the harmonic series. And that really revolutionized horn playing and writing for the horn. So Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, who all wrote solo works for horn, it was for the so-called hand horn. And if anyone has wondered why is the right hand in the bell, that's the reason to manipulate pitch.
So contemporary French horn players are still doing this with the current instruments, or did it evolve out of that?
Well, the advent of valves largely replaced the need to change pitch with the right hand, but we still use it because it it does affect pitch, so we can correct intonation with the use of the right hand, and also it has an effect on tone quality and and darkens and mellows the sound.
All right. I think you have some music to play for us. Shall we try? We're in a small space, and so we're going to give it a shot and see how French horn sounds inside the studio here. What would you like to play?
Well, this is the first work that will be performed on the recital tomorrow evening. It's by a local Vermilion composer, a man named Charles Dibley, and Chuck him is a tuba player himself and a very good one. Was the tubist in the Sioux City Symphony for quite a few years, and a good composer. And so it's a 21st century work, but I don't want anyone to cover their ears. It's still tonal. It still has melody.
All right, Gary Reeves. We have a little Thursday moment in sound here with University of South Dakota professor Dr. Gary Reeves, and you're listening to the French Horn. He has a fall faculty recital tomorrow. What time is that at, Dr.
It's at 7:30 p.m., and it's in Colton Recital Hall in the College of Fine Arts.
Is that something that all faculty, music faculty members do at a fairly frequent interval?
A lot of the performing faculty certainly do play recitals. This evening, for example, in the same space, Alessandra Ferris, one of our piano faculty members, is playing a recital. So, yes, it is something that occurs on a regular basis.
What's the music culture like in Vermilion? Within the university, you know, what kind of faculty do you have, and what's the sort of interaction between faculty and students?
Well, you know, first of all, it kind of makes a difference that we're part of a College of Fine Arts. It's a little more specific, a little more specialized. And so we have, you know, a fairly comprehensive faculty of specialists for all of the instruments. And, you know, the expertise level, I certainly think, helps our students. And also it lends itself to presenting performances in various genres and various ensembles. I think the Rollins Trio, piano trio, is very well known. We also have a woodwind chamber ensemble, of which the horn is a part. And that's a story for another day, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe not. How come the horn fits into a woodwind ensemble?
When orchestra rehearsals ended, You know, the string players would gather in string quartets and go off and make chamber music. Right. Well, the early members of the wind section of the orchestra wanted the same, and that included flute and oboe, clarinet, bassoon, and the horn. And so, you know, at the behest of those players, composers began to write woodwind quintet music.
Hmm. And what happened to the trumpets and trombones? They just, they had their own room?
Well, they came into regular use in the orchestra a little bit later. But,
okay.
Of course, now, as we are well aware, the brass quintet also is right. certainly a very standard chamber orchestra or chamber ensemble. And we have, you know, the Canadian Brass Quintet and the Empire Brass and the American Brass Quintet and quite a few permanent ensembles of that type.
In a lifetime of studying this instrument and studying music written for it, how has your, you know, perception of it changed, you know, over the years?
Well, early on, of course, you don't know a great deal about the history of the instrument. You know, I mean, when you start as a beginner, gosh, you haven't really reached Piaget's stage of conceptual thinking. You're a concrete thinker. And so, you know, you're just learning the instrument, learning how to produce notes on it, learning the fingerings and things like that. Later on, boy, the world of horn playing expands and you get into the history of the instrument and what types of music work best. And
when was that for you? When did you go from just being a kid who maybe wanted to practice, maybe mm-hmm. didn't want to practice, to saying, yeah, this is my life's work?
Well, I might have been a little bit of a late bloomer, Lori. I probably was already teaching public school instrumental music.
Wow.
And started to graduate school, as a lot of teachers do in the summertime. And it was a music education degree that I initially set out to obtain. But I took horn lessons. And at some point, my horn teacher said, have you considered working on a master's degree in performance? And, you know, I mean, I was so naive. I said, gee, why would I want to do that? And he said, you know, well, for one thing, because you could and not everybody can. And that was flattering, you know, of course. And so I considered it and decided to go that route. And I honestly can say I've never been sorry.
Right. Would you like to play something else for us?
Oh,
please?
Sure.
We would love to hear.
I have this is going to be the final selection on the program, and it's really a famous old work by Hoagie Carmichael. It's called Stardust, and this was an arrangement was done for solo horn with brass choir. Now, I don't always have the luxury of having a brass choir right there to accompany. So I did produce a reduction of the accompaniment for piano. And by the way, this recital last Friday evening, my pianist, Dr. Nancy Redfern, and I played where she teaches at Northern Michigan University in Marquette. And I think it was well received. So I hope the audience appreciates it.
Thank you.
Dr. Gary Reeves giving you just a little hint of the recital tomorrow night at the University of South Dakota. Let's just close with a little bit about the importance of music education in the state. I'm sure you've spent a lot of time thinking about this and in your own experience and at the college. Why does it matter?
Well, I think the more hectic, the more complicated the world becomes, the more we need the arts and certainly music as a part of that. And I also believe that children desire to play now just as much as they ever have. Music education, learning to play an instrument, provides a valuable service in addition to just playing the instrument itself. And that is, I think it teaches patience and persistence. In this day and age, sometimes we want things right away. Mm-hmm. To really become proficient on any musical instrument, that doesn't happen overnight. And so students do have to persevere. They gain a sense of stick-to-itiveness, if it were. And I really think that's a necessary thing, a necessary skill or concept to be developed in today's society.
Now more than ever. Mm-hmm. Gary Reeves, come back anytime. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Oh, Lori, bless your heart.